Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Houston, standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Started 2 hours ago. Not just now.
Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. I want to dip out early, though, because I'm bad at the rejoin. Will Kunkel in for Joe George. No Joe today. 713-780-ESPN. Wrong answers only. Where is Joe George? Joe's working on yard work to pay for Kunkel's appearance today on the show. Whose yard is he doing?
Mine.
Joe missed work because he got called up from the practice squad to be the starting quarterback for his Little League football team. They call Joe a toddler, Will. They say he's a giant toddler. Yeah. Interesting. Joe's helping Dubon look for apartments in Atlanta. I hope Yordan doesn't go visit him. He gets too close to the ballpark where there's fireworks because he might have to be hospitalized again. Joe's interviewing for Texans coaches challenge position. Do you think you can be better in that role than whoever the Texans?
Okay, so here's where I lie on this. And it's not a cop. I mean, I was critical of this coaching staff before the break as anyone has been and will be. All those are not – the same challenges. I don't know how, like the last one last week, okay, didn't win the challenge, not great. First half, lose your timeout, I don't really care.
Yeah, but you lose a challenge, too.
I get it.
You could potentially lose a full challenge
later in the game. I understand, but I think there's moments where a coin flip or even less than is like, okay. So maybe, I don't know how many of the 9 challenges DeMeco has made have been in the first half, you know, maybe not, versus he's making really bad challenges in the second half and they're all horrible. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying every challenge kind of has a story of its own.
You sound
I'm
like Brock Osweiler.
Real pissed off about it. Yeah.
Brock exactly. Osweiler. What do you say about it? Every interception has its own story? I mean, you can't argue the fact, though, that it's one of the worst percentages in entire league.
Right. But
and it's not DeMeco for what it's worth. It's their process.
It's the process. Yeah. Exactly. And you know what's funny? So when I was in Charlotte covering the Panthers, Matt Rhule was really, really bad. And he blamed – like, you can't see the scoreboard in moments, and it's like, wait, what, dude? And none of it made sense. And he was like, yeah, we got to get a replay guy up in the booth because they didn't have a guy looking at the replays. Like, it's not exactly as cut and dry, have a guy looking at the replay.
It's also different now than it was then. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Casario was asked about this by Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans All Access, and he's like, yeah, it's been – actually, it was on P&P. It was on Payne and Pendergast. I was listening to that. And he's like, yeah, we have a lot more monitors now. We have people looking at it more. You just have to read off the scoreboard or watch it off the video board and all of that. So it has become a little bit more modernized. I wonder ultimately who the guy is, though. I really want to know.
That's a lot.
Who is the guy making the decision?
Think about it. It's obviously not like your OC DC.
Yeah.
It's probably not even like the guy below them because they have bigger things that they're doing that they're watching to call the game. At the same time, you can't have a guy that does nothing and a nobody doing it.
Because I disagree.
You you can do it.
Not a nobody. But somebody who has that role only, I think you can have that.
Okay, well, that's my point. It's like you have to have a guy. But he can't just be a guy on the staff. Like, for instance, you know this is apples to oranges, but the translator for the Astros had some issues this year with the translation process. They're not actual translators. They're scouts throughout Major League Baseball that just translate. But some of them don't understand, for instance, Yordan Alvarez, who's from Cuba, versus somebody that speaks you know,
different
Mexican.
Spanish.
Like, it's different.
Yeah, different dialect.
So it's not like you can just take a guy and put him there unless you're hiring
they have another
a
job.
Replay guy.
Shohei's interpreter was an accountant on the side. That's what he did.
Yeah, I don't – he was – it was something. You buy that?
No, I think Shohei was betting on sports.
Hell yeah. Hard.
I've
the NBA cleared Terry Rozier, put it that way.
Yeah. I've found some of the guy who was taking his bets, like did the podcast circuit for a while before he got thrown into prison, which I tried to book him and his website was like, he's in prison right now. I was like, oh, my bad.
He's busy. He's in the California Penal League.
Because I've seen his TikTok stuff, man, and it's fascinating. He's got unbelievable stories. Mm. Unbelievable stories. I think he's writing a book, which I'm going to buy because the stories are unbelievable. But he was asked point blank on one of these podcast circuits. He's like, do you think it was Ipe? And he's like, no. Like, it was too big a bet. It's like, which interpreter is placing $500,000 bets at the like snap of a finger? And he was like caught up, too.
For
like
a long time.
Because he met Ipe like in a card game, and Ipe wasn't even playing. He was like hanging out with him, like with the Angels back in the day. So he met him through that and gave him like a credit line that would be, you know, like the same ratio of his like salary. And he was losing money like badly. He says he's the worst gambler he's ever had to deal with. Like losing money. But every time he was asked to like settle up, quick to pay, huge numbers. And he's like, he was paying too quick for it to have actually been Ipe. And he kept up in his credit line to where he was making like $600,000 bets or six-digit bets.
I wouldn't be surprised if Ipe was paying and had access and they were both in it together. Like he was the money guy or like, yeah. You know, Ohtani was the money supplier, but Ipe was like involved in it.
I mean, if that's the case, you would think that Ipe would have his names on the wires and stuff. There was a wire.
Not if he had access to his account.
But if you're Shohei Ohtani and you're betting with like an underground bookie, why would you put your name attached to that?
It just starts ground level. Like what? I mean, you know, I don't know.
So like if it's me and I'm Shohei and I'm betting on sports,
right?
And like maybe like whatever. Like I'm not saying I'm smarter than Shohei, but if I'm Shohei and I'm betting underground with some underground bookie, I have Ipe like helping me out. Every single name that is wired over is going to be Ipe. It's not going to say Shohei Ohtani.
Right.
And he got wired from Shohei.
No, I understand that. I think maybe it just kind of like he was gambling when he was overseas. He's in Asia. It's not a thing over there, like whatever. And then he comes up. You don't understand there's a cultural difference. You know, I don't know. There's a million reasons. But end of the day, I believe Shohei, I firmly believe Shohei was gambling.
Yeah,
like
I
for sure.
Yeah, I do too. All right, so that text a little bit earlier, the bigger question, if CJ doesn't like the system, then why did they make that OC hire in the offseason? I think that's where the flaw is at. And it's – look, I think Kalik can be a good offense coordinator. I think that he has grown. I think he's better now than he was at the start of the season.
I agree.
I think he's kind of like – I wouldn't say finding his groove, but just a little bit more comfortable now
than
the start of the season.
There's more like bumps in the – there's more spikes.
It's flatlining a little bit better, right?
Yeah.
Stabilizing a little better might be the better way to say that. But if you were to ask C.J. Stroud, or even your opinion, like which offense do you think C.J. Stroud would have the most success in, which thus, in turn, gives the Texans the best chance to have a successful offense?
I don't know whose it is or what it is. I think he likes throwing the ball down the field. I think he likes dropping back, reading the defense, and seeing guys over the middle and crossing routes from out wide. I don't think he likes the in-close angle throws. I think he loves throwing the ball from one hash to the other sideline, like we've seen with Nico. I mean, he can make those throws. I think he comes from that Ohio State offense, and I think he succeeded in that.
I completely agree with everything you said. I think the spread is the perfect offense for C.J. Stroud. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you hung out with C.J. Stroud and like you're just his friend, and, like, you were able to, like, you just talk ball with Stroud, like, off the record and all that. I think if you asked C.J. Stroud off the record and he trusted you, which offense do you want to play? And I think he would say a spread offense. Mm-hmm. So we can, like, and that was the kind of the point of what I was saying the other day, is that I don't think that Nick Caley, A, is the best coordinator for C.J. Stroud, B, has the best offensive scheme for C.J. Stroud. And then to take it back and rewind to the offseason, is that a failure of a hire because you find an offensive coordinator that doesn't marry well with C.J. Stroud? Absolutely, you would say that. I think they have failed C.J. Stroud, quite frankly.
Man, how much say do you think a quarterback should have in the hiring of a coaching staff?
Depends on the quarterback and depends on how long he's played. Like, if it's Tom Brady, yes, Brady, you can hire the OC. If it's Peyton Manning, like, you
is
know, when
CJ's
prime,
after his rookie year?
No. He shouldn't have say.
Right.
But so, the powers to the powers that be that are making the hire,
need to be aware.
They need to do a very good job of marrying the OC and the quarterback to bring the best out of the quarterback. And I don't think that Nick Haley, as a play caller and with his scheme, is the best coordinator to bring the most out of C.J. Stroud. I think that's where they went wrong. I'm not saying that Stroud should pick his O.C. Right. I don't think that first graders should pick their teacher. a little different whenever you're, you know, a Hall of Famer. But I think what they did wrong, or where they struggled, was to hire a play caller and a schemer that fits Stroud perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. But even here's my biggest hang-up, is if you think Kaylee's the next guy and you want that guy, I'm not going to argue with you because, okay, you see what you see, you know what you know, and the guy knows offensive ball. He's been around the league amongst offensive guys.
Like as the next great thing, or somebody that you trust the most to fit with your quarterback?
Well, no, here, hold on. If you want to make that hire, I'm not going to, like, hammer you on the hire in and of itself in that vacuum. What I'm going to hammer you on is that not all OC positions are created equally across the league. Some require guys that have done it and that are going to have success, that will have success because you're in a position to win a Super Bowl right now versus the Browns, the Panthers, and teams like that, that, hey, come learn on the job. We got 2 years for you. Texans don't have 2-3 years. Their window is right now. They needed someone that can do that. But if you want Kaylee so badly, fine. But then also pair him with someone else that has done it, that can help him grow.
Lazor's done it.
He didn't help Bobby.
I mean, CJ Stroud, when was CJ Stroud's best year?
I'm saying, but if Bobby got fired, obviously Bill Lazor couldn't help Bobby. Obviously the coach, they kept the same coaching staff for all intents and purposes around Nick Haley.
Which is another big problem, I think.
Exactly. So if those guys couldn't help Bobby save his job, and maybe there's a different reason, like Bobby refused to listen to all the geniuses in the room, well, are they helping Nick Haley? Or can you bring in, just to throw a name out there, like a Doug Peterson, who's called plays in the NFL for years and can help? Or a Jim Caldwell, a Norv Turner, someone like that that's seen all types of football that can just be an offensive assistant. Like the biggest –
See, I don't like that though either. Like it's – I don't mind it. Like I think that's helpful. Why not do that?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, you're hiring. Whenever you hire an offensive coordinator, that guy should be the boss of the offense.
They
don't allow them to do that.
I
like
agree.
Even whenever it was Slowick, took the job, they actually kept a lot of the offensive assistants. So I think that they're putting the offensive coordinator in a bad spot to begin with because you're not making him the manager of the offense.
Not only that, it's like, okay, you don't go to being ESPN Houston 97.5, 92.5, 3-6, Jeremy Branham, your first day out of college. Like, if you're put on the air for 3 days, your first 3 hours a day, you're being set up to fail. You're not being put in a position to have success. And then all of a sudden, your career is going to be derailed because the time you were on the radio, you didn't know how to fill 3 hours. You didn't know how to keep the conversation. You hadn't done it before. So now you take Nick Haley, who had never called plays.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten any better, actually.
No, I don't disagree. I'm just saying, like, this position is not the Panthers' job. This position isn't the Browns or the Raiders or the Jaguars. It's not the same. Not every OC, albeit only 32 of them in the world, are created the same. This is a position that required somebody who had done it. Not every CEO in the world is the same.
Yeah.
There are certain CEO positions you got to come in with 15 years under your belt, ready to roll and knowing how to handle the business world. That's what this position is for the Texans.
I wouldn't have hated Sean McVay in his first year as a coordinator.
Listen, there are exceptions to the rule. That's not my point. But to think that you're just going to catch lightning in a bottle and get it right, like, you got to be aware of the fact that your windows in this league, outside of, again, exceptions, is very small. Like, CJ's about to get 60. Will Anderson's
about
to get – or what – you know, these guys are going to get paid. My point is – you got to pay C.J. Stroud. You just paid Derek Stingley. You're going to have to pay Kamari Lassiter. You're going to have to pay Will Anderson Jr. Like, money's going to evaporate real quickly. That's going to make it very hard for you to build a very, very good team. And if you don't do it while the iron's hot, it's tough.
713-780-ESPN. We're going to give away Houston Cougar tickets, TCU tickets a little bit later. You got to be listening. You brought up the contract extension for C.J. Stroud. Something that kind of a brainchild of mine this week, which people didn't like that I had this. At what point does C.J. Stroud's contract get impacted based on the concussions he's had? Never. Like, does that need to come into play? 713-780-3776. Stop ruining the tease, Kunkel.
Nope.
Stop ruining
You're
it.
You're an idiot.
713-780-3776. Will Kunkel in for Joe George and Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Football season is in full swing, and however you like to get in on the action, you can do it on Underdog right now in Texas. This season, you can make team picks and player picks. Just download the app, sign up, and you'll get $100 in bonus entries when you make your first $5 fantasy entry. Using Underdog is easy. Just pick whether your favorite team will win or if your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, receiving yards, interceptions, and more. Plus, with Underdog's ultra-fast payouts, you can get your profits in a snap. So download the Underdog app today. Use promo code KILLERB, K-I-L-L-E-R-B, to score $100 in bonus entries when you make your first $5 entry. Player picks, team picks, all on Underdog.
Crypto.com predictions powered by Underdog Predicts. Trading derivatives involves risk and may not be appropriate for all. For more information, visit nadex.com/rules and underdogfantasy.com/rules. For Crypto.com predictions, the term pick refers to a product traded on CDNA. Must be 18 or older and present in Texas. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play-and-get-terms_DFS_.html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD 97.9 HD2.
Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
What about the, Brian told me we were hot, the guy was still talking. We were on the air, Will. Brian saying you guys are hot and Cutler's still talking. I was going to say something bad about Brian. Everybody's waving bye to me. The Ricos are out of here. This place is picking up here, Riverhouse. So Riverhouse is awesome. People are giving us ugly looks.
Man, behind, I wish we didn't have this ESPN Houston sign behind you. And yeah. The view here is outrageous. With the sunset.
It is beautiful.
Like, just truly awesome. Well,
I saw you looking very intimately at it. I thought it was just you gazing in my eyes.
So peaceful.
No. Joe Burrow once did. In that elevator in northern Kentucky.
Ew.
713-780-ESPN. Don't ooh that. That's one of the greatest stories of my life, and you're ooing it. Don't ooh somebody else's yum. Ew. Don't yuck somebody else's yum, Kunkel. Throwback Thursday. Jeremy and Joe featuring Will. Time to give out some Houston Cougar tickets. Cougars 8-2, baby. Winning Willie up to his winning ways. Nationally ranked in the every poll. Coaches poll, AP poll, college football committee. It is senior day as well. 8-2 Cougars. Come early. We'll be honoring our seniors. Tickets are just $25. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. Get your tickets today. Come early. Be loud. Wear red. Pair of tickets to caller number 3. Right now to 713-780-3776. You're going to see Houston and TCU Saturday at 3. UHCougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. Why don't you think that if C.J. Stroud continues to have injury issues that it won't impact his contract?
I just don't think any conversation like that's ever.
What if he becomes Tua?
I was going to say, does Tua even? Do those conversations happen with
him? Tua got paid a lot.
Exactly. So if it's not with Tua, that sure as hell not going to happen with C.J. And C.J.'s, this is not an argument of good and right and wrong, but, like, C.J.'s haven't been visually hard to watch, which doesn't mean it's a lesser of a concussion. So if it's not happening to Tua, where the entire country is, like, up in arms about it, it's certainly not going to happen to a guy that's getting, quote, run-of-the-mill whatever concussions.
I think that's a problem. I think it's a failure then. Like, if you're going to –
But can you alleviate these concussions to a degree?
There's preventative measures you should be able to put in place. And, like, I do think that we should be having the C.J. Stroud has had multiple concussion conversation, which people kind of just want to gloss over and not discuss, because they do need to have preventative measures. Like, there needs to be a conversation with Stroud about, hey, maybe let's limit how much we're running the football. Whenever you do run, maybe you're trying at all costs to avoid contact, and if that costs you 2 or 3 yards per carry, so be it. Your health is far more important. We can't have Davis Mills playing over you for two or three games every single time that you get a concussion. So I do think that you need to have preventative measures in place. Tua did the same thing. You know, Tua learned how to fall. Remember, that was a big thing. He went to like an MMA coach and he learned how to fall.
The inability of premier athletes to not know how to slide.
Yep.
Is crazy to me.
Stroud has talked about how he worked with the strength staff about sliding. He said it's something they did in the offseason.
Go to the Tom House School of Baseball. Hit that slide
pad. I prefer that Zemanski guy.
Tom Amansky. Yeah.
I put a Z in there for some reason.
Hit up the crime dog. Like, learn how to slide.
It worked for him. He's a Hall of Famer.
There are, you know, I've talked to trainers in the past of certain sports teams, and just like kind of like, what's the most shocking thing to you about elite athletes? And the inability for a great baseball player to move laterally or a great football player to slide, like, because so many athletes are not multi-sport athletes anymore that they can only do certain finite things extremely well to get them millions, but aren't overall great athletes. So like, just, and here's to another point to the sliding thing. I think the sliding rule is the worst rule in all sports.
Completely agree.
Because you are asking the predator to protect his prey. You're asking the defender to protect the guy he's going out to kill. And it's stupid. And the slide in and of itself is inherently what a puppy dog does when he's getting his belly rubbed. Your chest is up. Your face is open. Like, you're ready for the tickles, Jeremy. It's like you, after the show, you and Mapes love a good tickle fight. I understand that. It's not my thing. But the point is, it's a stupid position to be in on the football field. Like, at no point should you ever have your body down, chest open, head up. Like, you're ripped for your head getting smoked.
Also, like, the worst concussions I see are usually the whiplash of hitting the back of your
skull
on the turf.
Because your head's the only thing that is up.
Yeah.
It's dumb. So go out there
and just eliminate the slide?
So, I don't think you have to go one way or the other. You no more sliding unless you want to. Like, fine, but it doesn't protect you.
Yeah.
You either put flags on the quarterbacks or when you're outside the pocket, you're a full contact football player. And ironically enough, it's going to help protect them because they're going to get down and they're going to protect their body. And this is not something I believe we should do in the NFL. But if we took off the helmets of players like in rugby – what happens in rugby is guys use their shoulders and their bodies to hit because their face, the defender's face, and their head is vulnerable.
Yeah, it wouldn't have impacted Stroud's last.
No, I'm just saying, like, but the problem is what we do in the NFL is like there's so many pads that the helmets actually turn into a weapon versus a protection several times.
And they try to turn the rules into you can't lead with the helmet, or at least the crowd of the
helmet. And if guys don't have helmets on, they're not leading with their face, I promise you. I promise. Yeah. Those shoulders are what everyone's going to be hitting with.
Oh, I'm going to dip out. What are you boys going to talk about?
Ooh, you?
All right. Yeah, keep it here. They're going to talk badly about me. If you want to join in, 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel, Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald will take you the rest of the way. I'll talk to you a week from next Monday. Everybody's celebrating their car. They're like honking in the city of Houston. No more Branham for like 10 days. It's so great.
Golly.
You know it's a great thing to do, though? Always a great thing to go? Great thing to do? Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Escape the rat race for the weekend. The hustle and bustle of the job. Whatever's causing you stress and anxiety. And get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing great outdoors. Book that stay now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. They got the open green spaces for you. They got unbelievable wildlife. Beautiful, majestic trees. It's some of the best fishing in Texas. Two Creeks alongside their property. You can't beat it. Big catch and release pond in the middle of the property, too. Teach the kiddos how to fish. It's just 90 minutes from Houston, too. You're there in an hour and a half. Escape the city without going too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Hike their 92 acres of property. Play a little bit of a pickleball. They got the pickleball courts. Maybe you like to kayak. They got that for you. Or you can just always get a drink at Swampers. It's fantastic. They got college football at Swampers all the time. Always taking care of their visitors. Saturday morning, full of a bunch of activities for the kiddos. Food trucks are out there, bonfire and s'mores, always taking care of their visitors at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. And right now through February, you can get 40% off all cabin rentals, 20% off nightly RV stays. It's their 40-20 discount, perfect for relaxing by the fire or exploring the beautiful outdoors. Find them on social at Two Creeks Crossing Resort as well. And you might even win a free stay, so keep up with them on socials. Book your stay now at Two Creeks CrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
This is ESPN 97.5.
Jeremy and Joe.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Welcome back to ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 on the Jeremy and Joe Show with no Jeremy and no Joe.
I'm no
Will
Joe.
Hunkle filling in with Sean Mapes.
Just here. A couple regular Joes.
Yeah, at East River 9, yeah. Could you imagine having such a great job like this and the disrespect you show the public?
I know. Just because they both to...
You're cutting in and out with that mic over there.
All right. I'll try another one.
Golly. Hey, I'll handle this, okay? The fill-in guy. East River 9, unbelievable scene here tonight, starting to fill up. We got Texans and Bills tonight on Thursday Night Football. Curious what y'all think about this game. And there's a couple things that I was looking at some stats-wise. The Texans are 5-5, despite leading the NFL in both scoring and total defense in this season. And no team has ever led the NFL in both scoring and total defense, but failed to finish even multiple games over 500 in a full season. So tonight will go a long way in them hopefully rebuking another trend that they have done this year where they have an elite defense. And for the first time in NFL history, no team with such a great defense has been under 500, which has been the story most of the season. That is no longer the story now as they got back to 500, but still issues with this offense. That's been my pet peeve. That's been the narrative all season long with this team. And tonight, I actually like their odds. I know people might think that I'm crazy because the Bills are better than the Titans and they can barely beat the Jaguars, but this is a matchup game to me. This is a game where I think the Texans, they don't have to worry about a formidable front with the Bills. That defensive line is not world beaters. They're not going to get after Davis Mills, at least not what they've put on paper. It doesn't mean that this Texans offensive line is not going to allow a stunt or two to get through to Davis Mills, but what it means is that this matchup is good for them, and I think that's who the Texans are this season. They're a team that can beat very good teams like the Bills, but then lose potentially to someone like the Titans or the Jaguars because they have a formidable front. And the offense for the Texans is not good enough to really pull away from anybody outside of really bad teams like the Titans late in the game or the Ravens when they're really beat up. I'm curious what y'all think. I believe this is a 4.5-point spread now as it sits. I like the under in this game. If y'all are betting, tease the under and then take the points. That's what I like so far, but I really like Woody Marks breaking out in this game. I think this is an opportunity. I don't know if we believe that it's going to happen or that we believe in Nick Caley to actually do what we think should be done, what we all think should be done. But this is a Woody Marks game. Get him off the edges. Get him the ball out of the backfield. Let him cook. You got to run the ball successfully in order for Davis Mills to have success. Davis Mills is not a guy that's going to go out there and throw 44 times and have success and be able to go tit for tat with Josh Allen. But this Texans defense might give you some short fields. Josh Allen, as Jeremy was talking about earlier, he is significantly a boom or bust type of player. I think he's better than what Jeremy was saying. He thinks he's more flair and dramatics and excitement than he is championship. I think he can win a championship. I think he's that good of a quarterback. But to defend Jeremy's little bit silly point, as they typically are, even though we agree basically on almost everything that we ever talk about, he has the propensity to turn the ball over, and he had one of his worst games of his career last year in Houston. And listen, everybody, this Houston defense, it's the best in the NFL, but it's even better when they're at home. That's why I think tonight is so critical. So I get there early. I'm going to be there tonight with a buddy. We're going to be able to watch the game as fans, and then I'll be able to go down and give you guys a full post-game report on Kicking It with Kunkel on my YouTube channel. But I'm pumped to be able to take it in with everybody tonight and enjoy this game, enjoy this atmosphere. I really hope I don't get there, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Bills jerseys. Because when we got to that 49ers game, man, boy, were there Niners fans everywhere. I'm hoping that's not the case tonight, Mapes.
No.
Nope, your mic's not working.
Oh,
damn, dude, Mike Mapes has so many interesting points and things to say, and the world can't hear him. It's really unfortunate. Texans 5-5, third in the AFC South.
There he is.
Obviously, the expectations for this season have changed. I think we can get back on track with the playoff talk tonight with a win, but they've changed from the standpoint of, hey, let's try to win the division, let's try to get two home games in the playoffs, and AFC championship game at home would be ideal. Like, that was the hope coming in.
Yeah.
Then we all of a sudden went from that to, holy hell, what the hell is going on to 0-3? Now we're back to looking at the playoffs, how it shapes up. Winning a game like this against the Bills would go a long way.
Winning a game like this against the Bills would mean that they're a very serious team, very serious playoff team, not just because they've fought the way back to 500 and with a win over 500. It means you went 3-0 with your backup quarterback. And that speaks to really how complete of a team you are.
Like, yeah,
that,
yeah, but also it speaks to the schedule. Like the Jaguars and Titans, right?
Yes, but the Jags are a team that you're competing with to make the playoffs. The Bills would be a win that we all expect to be a playoff win, a team that's in the playoff contention there. So to me, it really speaks to that this team was always kind of what we – maybe not exactly what we thought they were, but the surrounding pieces around the offense. I mean, you watch some of these games, and the special teams has fallen off a bit from early in the season. But I remember watching that Tampa game week two and the defense making stop after stop until the last drive. And then the Frank Ross's special teams unit making a big return where the offense couldn't do anything. And I thought, wow, this is two-thirds of a really good team. And the offense just failed them so much. And now the defense has still kind of been at that level. The special teams less so. And I think the offense has found its footing a little bit the last few weeks.
A little bit, but not like.
It's not as ugly.
It's not as like,
oh my God, this is unwatchable.
We've lowered the bar to such a degree that it looks like and it feels like they've gotten better. Here's what tonight says. Tonight's a measuring stick game. Tonight is one of those games where you say, hey, let's see where we stack up against the teams that we want to be like. We want to compete against in January. This is one of those games against the Bills. We had one of those games. The last one we really had was the Seahawks. We thought coming out of the bye week, let's see where we stack up against the Seahawks because, listen, we started the season off 0-3, lost to the Rams, one of the best teams in the NFL, Buccaneers, Jaguars. It was a complete disaster. And then, okay, we got two wins, but they certainly weren't – you couldn't tell how you stacked up against the Titans and Ravens in those situations. So coming out of the bye week, our next opportunity to do that, to see where we stand, it's not all about wins and losses when you have these conversations. It's not just about getting to 10 wins. Yes, now it is. You just want to get those 9-10 wins in the playoffs, and let's start fresh and let's figure it out. But not every 10-win team is the same. There's certain 10-win teams who say, listen, dude, it's going to be a flame out one and done. Certain 10-win teams playing tougher divisions, and they're going to make runs. But this is the next game that they have because the 49ers game was not a measuring stick game. The Broncos was a more of a measuring stick game only because their defense was that good, but the offense so bad. Jaguars wasn't it. Titans wasn't it. So now this is that game where if you can beat the Bills, you say, all right, we're not back. We aren't who we want to be necessarily because you got to string those together against good teams, and you have the opportunity with the Bills, Colts, and Chiefs in your next three games. But this is a measuring stick game, finally, and you get them at home. That's what sucks so much about that Chiefs game. You got to go on the road in a tough situation at Arrowhead at night on NBC. Like, that's a tough game on Sunday Night Football because the environment. Now you get a tough game against a good opponent on a short week in your building. Go out and prove that you can win these measuring stick games and stack up against the best ones. That's what tonight is. Now let's get to D'Angelo on the phone lines. You want to talk about the Texans and C.J. Stroud's injuries. Oh, he dropped. D'Angelo, you had it. You were right there. You couldn't finish out the fourth quarter.
A little bit more patience,
D'Angelo.
That's
what we're talking about.
That's all we need.
There's four quarters to a game, guys. You got to close out. That's what we're asking this defense to do. We need you to be great against Josh Allen all game. But then when it comes down to that final drive, you can't give up that touchdown against Cam Ward and the Titans. if you have the expectations of this defense. And I'm not saying that, like, oh, my God, it doesn't make them good. It sure as hell does. They're the best in the NFL. But for this team to hit its stride, the defense is going to have to win a game almost entirely by themselves. Maybe that's tonight. Maybe it is. But I also think that the Bills' defense is ripe for a couple points to be put up.
Yeah, there's definitely some ground to be made up on the ground with that Bills' defense.
Indeed.
We see that basically every time the Bills' team loses. But you hit the nail on the head with the late touchdowns that this defense pitches almost a perfect game, or I guess almost a shutout. And for several times a season, they lose with them on the field, or they give up the score with them on the field.
Yeah, and I want to talk about something after this break here on ESPN Radio, Houston 97.5, 92.5, as we are live at East River 9. So many people think that the media has been negative this year. Bro, I talked to Kamari Lassiter about this in the locker room this week. I'll tell you exactly what he said. It's exactly what we've been doing all week. And then I also want to touch on the Rockets, because the Rockets' huge win last night. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes here at East River 9.
Loaded and ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
That's not true. That's not true at all. Will Kunkel here, the host of Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. If you haven't done so yet, please head on over to YouTube. Give me a follow. Give me a subscribe. Hit me up. Let me know how much of a moron you think I am. I want to talk about Kamari Lassiter and a conversation I had with him in the locker room, because so many fans think that the media has been a little bit negative this year, and it's because the expectations were high. The defense has been great, but the narrative of the story of the season is the fact that the offense has dragged this team down to a 500 team finally. And in talking with Kamari, we were asking him, what allows you guys to be the best defense in the NFL? And obviously, like, talent, of course, but they don't seek to be the number one defense. They go about their business. And then he also said something very interesting, which is what we do in the media a lot. He said right after he was done talking to the media, they were going up to their position rooms, they're going to break down film and find everything they did wrong. That's how you become better, y'all. You don't do it by talking about all the positives all the time. You know what you do well. You don't always know what you don't do well and how to get better at it, and it's got to be pointed out. There are certain things on this defense that hasn't been great. They're the best in the NFL, but they got to tackle better. They got to finish at the quarterback from time to time a little bit better, and they got to finish games stronger. That's it, you know? He talked about that, so that's why us in the media sometimes can be what you deem as a little negative. And that's with the best defense in the NFL, let alone some of the thoughts that we have on the offensive side of the ball. Kickoff for the Texans, by the way, in about an hour 15. Hopefully you guys are down there tailgating, listening to ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. I said I also want to talk about the Rockets. Huge game last night, huge win on the road in Cleveland, 114-104. It's tough to take away a lot from a single game in the NBA with 82 games being played, but I love the way this team is really shaping up. It's not Kevin Durant heavy. Last night he shot 1 of 6 from deep, 6 for 18, had 20 points. You know, a nice game. But they don't rely on him. That, like, if Kevin's not dropping 35 a game, they don't know where to go. They're one of the most, if not the most, they're the most efficient offense in the NBA. And they're dead last in three-point attempt rate. They're number one by a mile in offensive rebound rate. And this was something that I said, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 10 years ago, that sports a lot like fashion is cyclical. Something that's out is now in. Something that's in is going to be out in X amount of years. Everybody was big in the NBA. Then everybody got small. The bigs couldn't keep up. And part of this has to do with analytics, so you still got to be able to shoot the three at least to a degree. So I wonder if that's going to hurt the Rockets at some point. But they went big. Everyone else is now small. We saw that last year. I still think that the Rockets were a better team than the Warriors. Their mismatches were crazy inside. Unfortunately, you had your best player, if you even want to call Jalen Green that, was absolute ghost town. I mean, non-existent. Throwing up tour dates. Or, well, not even throwing up tour dates. He was going 1 of 6. Not 3 of 20. 1 of 6. Like, taking 6 shots. So, you were playing a hand behind your back. This year, they still have that DNA of defensive mentality in there. But they're the best offensive team in the league. And they're not even shooting the 3 at a rate, which I love. Like, I think it's great for this team, and they have the superpower and the superstars, and the bar of
East River 9 loves it.
They love my take, and I think that's fantastic for these people. They get it. They understand.
Yeah, not a very low amount of threes, pretty high percentage. Only the guys that are good at taking them are taking them for the Rockets, and that helps avoid some of the tour dates that we saw last season, where they're so dependent on Green getting those shots for the team, and he was a little overstretched in that role. Şengün's grown nicely into that role. Obviously, they add Durant, and you see the fruits of that.
You have a closer in Durant, which is huge.
And you needed it last night.
You needed it last night, and you needed it all year last year. And you had closers at times last year during the regular season. Having a closer during the postseason, as we learned, is very different. And this is something that's a hang-up with the NBA. It's a pet peeve of mine. It's what makes watching the NBA on a nightly basis. Outside of the Rockets, like, I watch them for obvious reasons for work, and I enjoy watching them because I enjoy the way they play, frankly. But Rafael Stone incidentally hit on this, I believe, at the end of last year by accident. He was asked about the effort that the Rockets play with night in and night out. And they won a lot of games, as he said, because of their effort. But effort alone in the playoffs is not enough. Well, that kind of goes to the point of, hey, you can win a bunch of games in the NBA.
Just trying hard.
Just by trying. Just try. Like, that's not great for the product.
No, no.
It's not great for the league. Now, it makes the playoffs awesome. But then you got to have closers. And the Rockets did not have those closers. They got that now with Kevin Durant. They have a DNA. They have a team also that travels well. Defense travels well. Bigs travel well. And you're not living and dying by something that's hopefully going to drop in that three-pointer. You still need them. It's still the analytic game, but you don't have to live and die by it. All right, for Jeremy Branham, and, well, not for Joe. Joe quit on us from the start.
Yeah.
He's already at the tailgating. I'm
at
sure
an adult cheerleader competition, something like that, yeah.
With Bill Belichick's girlfriend. That's going to do it for me, Will Kunkel, live at East River 9 inside the Riverhouse. A phenomenal host. Appreciate them having us. Find me on YouTube, Kicking It with Kunkel. I'll be back tomorrow, 3 to 6, with Joe George. Be safe, be pleasant, be blessed, and go Texans tonight.
ESPN 97.5.